Welcome. This is William Evans, and you are listening to another Living World Conversation. Our guest today is Travis McFlynn, a Roaring Fork Valley artist. Welcome, Travis.
Thank you, Will.
What can you tell us about your relationship with nature?
It's everything. It's all-encompassing. It feeds me. It inspires me. It's the divine intelligence that cradles me. That is me. I am it.
Wow. And eventually your journey with nature gifted you an understanding of beauty.
I think that inherently dancing with it will reveal itself as beauty.
And so your nature found a way to connect with beauty.
Absolutely.
Has the fire of this passion always been burning in you?
I think so, yes. And I think that it's led me. I think I've been led. It shows itself at every corner, at every turn, every crossroads.
How do you work?
Sometimes I have no idea. Other times I'm right on the mark. I would say fun is the sharpest tool in my toolbox. And
fun.
F-U-N. Yeah, F-U-N. Yeah.
And sometimes you've said to me you're very intuitive in your work.
Absolutely. I find that in searching for beauty, looking under the rocks, under things, flipping things over, maybe turning something upside down or trying things other than the instructions is very fruitful. And so I think intuition is kind of collaborative. It's me and nature and beauty discovering ourselves.
And when we talked about this before, you indicated when you're making art or working with a being, you receive cues and you're empathetically sensitive to what they're communicating.
Absolutely. I find that sometimes that can be almost overwhelming. Kind of like how a rainbow or the rising sun can kind of bring a tear to your eye. Then there's levels to it. Sometimes, you know, you meet somebody and the energy is very intense. So the cues are really obvious, and other times they're more subtle.
But if you're listening to those cues, inherent in that is respect.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what's it been like for you being a sensitive?
I think that the yearning to kind of have a kind of rite of passage or a ceremony with my community that explains what that is or what the feeling is, the signal, so as not to be overloaded by it or its power, kind of. It's been a journey, so getting to understand it, knowing how to not be attached to it or to let it go and not have it be overwhelming, I think is a big part of it, but also being so blessed by having it, being able to be engulfed by it.
The sensitivity.
And feel it. Being able to really feel everything from inanimate objects to birdsong.
But it's also part of the reason you don't like crowds.
Yeah, well, it can be a lot. And in some crowds, especially in certain contexts, the energy is, it's kind of like the levels on this, these microphones. It can be all in the red.
Empathetic people seem to be more vulnerable also to addiction.
True. Yes. I think that empathy is vulnerable to not just addiction, but narcissism, or there's many things that can take advantage of it. I see these examples in nature too, in parenting, or just with energy harvesting. Yeah. So learning to kind of drive the ship and not have your ship be driven is a big part of it. And I think that a good way to kind of describe that is when you're learning what it is or how to deal with it, there's a big part of it that you kind of, you think it might be personal, like it's, this is because of me, or like I did something wrong, or you take on the external energies as your own, because before you realize they're not yours, that overwhelming thing to help turn it off, or even just feel it completely can lead you, if not directed by an elder, it can lead you to places that you weren't expecting to go.
So building a relationship with awareness is a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah.
And there's beauty in the compost pile decaying. Organisms and death are dancing in an alchemy of transformation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the kind of arcanum that beauty is, or the quicksilver. Beauty is, in understanding that it is in fact the flowers and the sunrises, but it's also things that don't seem beautiful right off the bat. And you mentioned compost. The most fertile soil on earth has the highest concentration of death and rot in it, and being able to take those cues as not as destruction, but as part of the creation, expands the encompassing allness of what is beautiful.
There's a rhythm in the flow of energies in nature. And those who are sensitive are more likely to know whether they're in alignment with nature's flow as much as they have the ability to be.
Absolutely.
And they're more likely to feel, they can't stand it if they can't get back into alignment.
Yes.
And they experience discord much more powerfully.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the idea of being numb in the context of feeling too much seems like something to yearn for. Although in the kind of the gaze or the aim of being able to, what would you call it? Maybe it kind of intuitively or kind of harmonically helping balance things out. People that are sensitive are extremely important part of our society and our tribes. I think having a space where being able to be overwhelmed when you see things like falling apart helps the whole. And I think that one of the issues that we have, and this ties back into, you mentioned the word addiction, is that a lot of these intuitives or sensitives, they have nowhere to put what they're seeing, or nowhere to really say what needs to be said, or when they do say it, they're often shunned because power structures don't want to hear that there could be another way to do things, or that things might be amiss. So historically, they've been shut off, whether through, you know, the classic examples of drinking the hemlock, or, you know, the more Abrahamic versions, which would be, you know, crucifixion or whatnot. This idea that the sensitive needs a place to kind of sing from the mountaintops and an ear to hear them, that doesn't consider them schizophrenic or maladaptive, helps kind of break apart the kind of compacted soil that can happen in a kind of a monoculture of modernity.
And so it's really inherent in this sensitivity that these people are also the ones who may be more likely to align with survival and creativity.
True. Yeah. I mean, if there isn't a word like shaman or seer, then yes, they will develop their own vernacular so that they have a platform, even if it's invisible.
This is KDNK, and we're in a Living World conversation with Travis McFlynn, a Valley artist. You mentioned initiation. Because your culture doesn't have an initiation, or you were not allowed to participate, you've said to me your initiation took place communing with Source.
Yeah, in the broader kind of 40,000 foot view context of what might have been viewed as missing out on the rite of passage for a young man in their tribe, allowed me to not kind of be bonded to what's going on right now in a way where I was, I feel the divine was what's leading it instead of the minds of the men around me. So that freed me from the kind of constraints of any of these kind of current themes, I guess. So yeah, in a very real sense, I got very lucky, and that was Source itself doing the work as opposed to fathers, uncles, brothers, peers. So what seemed like a confusion at first was much more of a divinely inspired gift. Really, I couldn't be more jazzed about the whole thing, really, like a gratitude.
Well, and there's some potential distractions on the path.
Absolutely.
So holding course is commendable.
Well, like I said, it's a collaborative. I feel led. And I think that's where you have those moments where in that dark night of the soul or, you know, before the dawn, where you kind of realize you're being carried. You know, the hubris to say that I was the one walking through that would be a little too much. I was definitely carried. And that kind of brings it back to beauty, this idea that out beyond everything else, Source is still there. And that's where it kind of becomes mind-blowing, where you're out beyond the end of kind of the mind's ability to quantify it. You know, you're looking for a number or a sentence or a book or whatever, and it's not there. That's where it's the galactic or the cosmic or whatever, fill in the blank word, but it's the bigness or the fullness of the all of it all, the unnameable.
And was the unnameable who led you?
Yeah, I mean, if it's unnameable, it's not even a who at that point. That's the wild part about it, is it. Language, as I know it, I don't have the vernacular to say in such a beautiful way as I want to say what it is. So in trying to talk about that beauty, it's kind of like a system overload where all the little lights start blinking red because all of the words I have, the quantifiable aspects of them explode and are obliterated into infinity.
And inadequacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So initiation is when the elders of a community induct boys into the maturity and caretakership of male responsibility for relating to Source.
Yes.
In ways that benefit all life in a watershed, as well as the village and oneself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in that, knowing oneself and why it is that we would protect the watershed out beyond the idea or the concept that it is a physicality, and that kind of like you know, like the game warden or the forest ranger. That's also the high priest. That's also the janitor. That responsibility isn't a burden. It's a gift. It's a gift to protect all that is beautiful. And I think that's where the idea of love really starts to hit home. Because in the beginning, love is kind of bouquets and chocolates. But really, at the end of the day, the amount that I am capable of loving is what I will do to protect that which I love. Like my daughter, if I have a daughter, and something is going to poison her or corrupt her, the extent to which I will go to stop that. And that ties back into that kind of that idea of compost being the most fertile soil, has the highest concentration of what might be considered death or rot in it, that all of a sudden realizing that love has the capacity to obliterate or to grind stone into sand. And you know, that translates through architecture and art and agriculture and how we practice it and what it means to look into the future at a minimum 7 generations. Let's do 111 generations. You know, that the idea is that we're growing up, I always heard that leave no trace kind of ethos, you know, take only pictures, leave only footprints kind of thing. How do you do that on a civilization scale? How do you create systems, agricultural systems, that aren't extractive? They are pure input. And can you do it with architecture? I'm not sure. You can do it. You can look at the cave, some of the oldest cave art. They've been studying those caves long enough now where they realize that where the art is where the acoustics were best in the cave. And they looked around at the actual cave itself and realized that there was evidence the cave was being played like an instrument. So that music, what was happening in the cave, is now just a distant echo. And that the cave paintings were kind of secondary or tertiary to what was happening communally with people, with elders and those kids. And bringing it back to this idea of initiation or rites of passage or ritual, learning how to do the right thing that will echo into eternity for posterity. I think in the context of now time, there's a material part of it that, you know, got to go to college, got to have a bank account, got to have a house, get this, that, get the car. When all that evaporates into its illusory kind of when all the material just fluxes into nothing, and you realize that we're here for such a quick time. Like, have I lived the kind of life that my great-great-grandkids will sing songs about, you know? Like, am I the hero in my story?
And your journeys allowed you to understand beauty in ways you just described that you couldn't have done before.
True. True. And that's that wild alchemical thing where turning lead into gold. I mean, at that moment, the lead and the gold are almost equal. You kind of can't have one without the other. So that dark night of the soul is what led to the awakening. So, yes, it's not the destination. And that waking up to how all of the most chaotic crossroads were perfectly timed down to the millisecond to be exactly where I want to be now, then Source knows me better than I know myself.
And when you lose everything, you're redirected back to who you are.
Right, which is gaining everything, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talked a little bit before about your outdoor education trips in school and that they were the peak experience of your year. And beauty was radiating everywhere in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the interesting thing about those two was that you had to come home, right? So it wasn't that you lived there. Kind of like when you go see your favorite band, they get back on the road and the show's over and you come home. And so kind of wanting is that as the young boy to kind of live that permanently, be permanently on the outdoor education, you know, that week where you're out in nature, it's the most alive you are. I mean, I imagine that some of the kids might not have thought so, but I didn't want to come home. I wanted to have that be my life.
Right.
Full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the season of lovely spring rains nourishing the flowers, beginning to bloom, and rising river waves are like the power within, beauty perpetuating itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and these are the kind of things that have inspired cultures throughout time to have ritual, you know, whether they're equinoxes, solstices, the flowers returning. These, for the same reason why I wanted to be permanently on my outdoor education. And to kind of backtrack a second, the fact that this school system has those, I know a lot has changed since I was in the school system. So I am imagining now that many, many more than when I was younger have that. But I remember there being a very strong kind of murmur in the community about how important that was and how there were some of our professors or teachers had shirts made, and there was an entire kind of culture around the fact that we had an outdoor ed program. And whether it's the Waldorf education or some of the stuff in, let's say, in Japan, where the kids don't even wear T-shirts so that their immune systems are stronger, they have more fortitude. I think this harkens to the fact that we kind of are out of place. We're, to quote an author, we're a species with amnesia. So we've kind of forgotten who we are. And that's why we have allergies. And, we need layer upon layer upon layer of this kind of perception of protection from this beauty or this nature, you know, because we're not living in it full time. And so very few of us, and I know what it's like to get to the point where you can at night, you know where you are because you can see the sky, because you've been looking at it enough nights in a row where you've mapped it in your head. It's a wild feeling. Now, in a time where that was normal, you wouldn't think about it, but in a time where you're usually looking at a ceiling because you're inside, waking up to the fact that, oh my gosh, I now have the night sky mapped into my body and the fluid in my body and my ears know where I am and can geolocate just by looking up.
Waking up. Part of waking up is the initiation realization that a man is in contact with his inner beauty.
Yeah. Yes. The inner beauty seems to have been kind of fraternally hazed out of us. You know, if you want to go down the rabbit hole of talking about beauty or emotions, oftentimes as a young man, we tend to be ostracized or made fun of or whatnot. And growing up to or realizing that that couldn't be further from the truth, that the strength comes from that beauty, not the other way around. Yeah, beauty really is the foundational core of whatever this realm is that we're living in.
And it's a doorway into the common goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, beauty is the common goodness.
Well, within this time of notable instability, Travis, you're experiencing the joy of being in balance. And this is a commendable accomplishment. May you travel in beauty.
Likewise, Will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Radio. You've been listening to another Living World Conversation. This one has been with Travis McFlynn. Thank you for listening.
One heart.